Before comedy and sci-fi. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 208.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Hello, friends, and welcome to an extra episode of the Art of Bombing podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bublitz Jr., with you as always. Today, it is Friday, June 25th, 2021. You're probably wondering, why is there an extra episode? What happened to the flashback episodes that you were doing every other week? What's going on? We're so confused. Well, the reason you got an extra episode this week is because I had a great conversation a month or so ago with my friend Stephen Couts. He's my former business partner from when I owned my comic book store. That's right, we owned a comic book store together, and he's an old friend. Now he is a sci-fi author, and I wanted to talk to him so he could, you know, promote his book, his series. He's got a sci-fi series that he's writing. He's got a couple books already out, and there's a few books already planned in the series, and I wanted to have a conversation about that. The reason I'm releasing it as an extra episode, though, is that it doesn't really fit into, this particular conversation doesn't fit into what The Art of Bombing has evolved into. He's not a performer. So some of this stuff translates, though, because we do talk about failure, and we do talk about writing and having writing routines and things like that, because my friend Steven is a very dedicated writer. He puts a lot of time and effort into writing, and he sets goals, and so that's what we talked about. So I thought this would be a fun bonus episode as opposed to a regular episode, and it kind of gives a little bit of insight into me, the host, Dan Bublitz Jr., before I got into comedy, because it was kind of like a reunion for us. We talked about the olden days when we owned our comic book store together in Watertown, South Dakota. It was called Empiric Cards and Comics, and we had the business for about 6 years. So we talked about that. So that's a cool thing that you're going to get a little in-depth, a little bit of insight onto me, Dan Bublitz Jr., your host of the Art of Bombing podcast. Now, as far as flashback episodes, they will be returning starting next Friday. I will be bringing them back every other week. I did slip, but I've been busy on the road a lot. But I'm going to get back into the swing of things and get back to the flashback. So if you've been enjoying the flashback re-releases, they will be back next Friday. I promise you that. If you are listening to this on Friday, June 25th, the Dan on the Run comedy tour continues. I will be at the Back Line at 10 p.m. in Omaha, Nebraska with Brooke Barcell, former guest of the show, Tom Chilstrom, former guest of the show. You can go to the Backline's website to get tickets, or you can find their site through going by to my website, danbublitz.com. I'm also going to be tomorrow, Saturday, June 26th. I'll be at Limestone Brewers in Osage, Iowa with Tom Chilstrom. He's coming out on the road with me this weekend. So if you want to go to either of those shows, just go to danbublitz.com and you can get all the information over there. And again, make sure wherever you're listening to the podcast, you hit the little follow button, follow us. Helps us out if you share the podcast with your friends, leave a nice rating, maybe give us a 5-star rating, leave us a nice review. And of course, everything else, you can go over to the artofbombingpod.com, the website. You can buy hats, stickers, pushback pins, the whole bunch of stuff, shirts, you name it. You can get it over at the website. While you're at the website thinking about maybe buying merch, you know what else you can do? You can submit a bomb. If you bombed recently and you want to share it with our listeners, with our friends, with our community, go over to the Submit a Bomb page, fill out the form, and I might read it on the podcast, or if you call it in to the Bomb Squad hotline, I may play it on the podcast, and it might be included in the mailing list, the monthly newsletter, which you can also sign up for at the website. Go to the artofbombingpod.com. You can subscribe to the monthly newsletter. Don't worry, we don't do spam. It's a once a month newsletter, and that's the only thing we do with the email list for the Art of Bombing podcast. We don't send an email every week with new episodes. We don't do any of that stuff. It's a once a month newsletter, so don't worry, you won't get spammed. It's fun. We put a lot of fun. Try to put a lot of fun stuff into that. Which reminds me, if you've been getting the newsletter and you have any feedback, I'm always open to suggestions to improve it, because I'm always willing to try something new or add to it, you know, so just give me that feedback. I'm always, this is always about continuous improvement. That's basically what we've got going on here, continuous improvement. So doing my best to do better when I can. Now, lastly, if you enjoy what I do and you want to give me a tip, you can do that by buying me a coffee. You can head over to buymeacoffee.com/dbubcomedy. That's D-B-U-B comedy. And throw in a $5 tip, and that'd be great. Greatly appreciated. Buys me a coffee. Maybe more likely buys me a beer. Either way, it definitely helps show that you appreciate what I do. But again, the most important thing you can do to really show your appreciation for what we're doing over here at the Art of Bombing podcast is sharing the content, telling somebody about the podcast. We need to help grow the show together by sharing. Share the show. Hashtag share the show. I don't know if that's a thing. Some other podcast has probably already said that. Who knows? If I'm stealing from somebody, I apologize. But in our reality, is anything original anymore? I don't really think it is. I don't know. All right, that's enough of this intro. So here is an extra episode of the Art of Bombing podcast with my dear friend Stephen Kautz. Enjoy.
We gotta get you practice so when you're a big famous author you can be used to doing interviews.
Yes, that would be helpful. The goal is to be
speaking of bombing, I feel like you're gonna bomb some of these interviews.
I probably will.
Okay, everything sounds good. That's good. We're sounding good. Like I said, just make sure you keep the microphone somewhat close. Try not to flail a little too much. But yeah, so we'll get into this now. 53,000 comic books. That is approximately how many comics you have in your basement.
Yes, an approximate number. It's more likely higher, but that's just a calculated count by boxes and.
That's crazy because you've been collecting since you were 8.
Yep.
Do you think when you move, if you ever move, your friends will help you move again?
Probably not. They all told me they wouldn't after the first time, so I have to go make new friends that don't know about them.
Yeah, exactly. That's why you keep the comics in your basement, so other people can't see them, so they don't know. They're like, oh, you got a lot of stuff, but yeah, it looks like light stuff. I could probably help you move.
Yeah,
and like, then you're like,
like the miniatures and the board games, you know, those are easy to move.
Just wait till you go to the basement. I remember that, helping you move into the house, and we had to do like an assembly line from the moving truck down to your basement, and we were all like, yeah, we're not doing this again. And that was like, how long have you lived here now?
Since 2007, 2006.
So you've been here almost 15 years.
Almost 15.
So, yeah, I'm sure your comic book collection has increased tremendously since then.
I moved all the comics to Watertown by myself into my mom's house. And I remember when we were moving them out of my mom's house that I wasn't even sure when it was going to end. And then I heard nothing but bitching when we were moving in. And how nobody's going to help me again.
Yes, and definitely not now. Those that were there that day definitely aren't going to help, because they know how much of an obsessive collector you are when it comes to comic books. So we all know that collection just got bigger. It definitely wasn't going to shrink.
No, it's definitely gotten bigger.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And then you throw in all the gaming cards and the miniatures and
role-playing books, board games and everything else. I mean, you pretty much, like, your house is like a gaming store, except you don't sell.
Yeah.
But that's what I like. You walk in, and that's what it reminds you of. There's just, like, nerd stuff everywhere.
I don't sell. I remember when I gave the Star Trek CCG cards to the store we had.
Yep.
Yeah. And I've regretted it ever since, and I've gotten some of it back, not what I had. But that was my decision to never get rid of stuff again. So it can sit in my closet, and I can never look at it. Often when I do go through my closet, it's fine. It's kind of fun because I always find stuff that I didn't realize I had.
That you forgot you had. Like, do you have like a master inventory of stuff? Do you like take inventory?
Well, for the comics, I got like issue one, and then I stopped.
So you don't actually know.
I don't actually know
what you have down there.
I just know how much fits in every box and how many boxes.
Wow.
I've
got. So you don't know if you have complete runs or not.
I know I have complete runs.
You assume you do.
I know I have complete runs because I have a checklist that I take when I pick the comics up.
Yes.
That I cross those numbers out.
Yeah. But I was just on a podcast or a streaming show that actually streams on the Rainbow Facebook page, and the two hosts that were on there, I brought you up, and I was like, well, have you ever been in there on a Saturday, and this grumpy old dude is sitting at a folding table going through comics? It's my old business partner, Steve. He's got a lot of comics. Because it's true. You do. I like I said, we were talking before I started recording, and I think you probably have one of the biggest collections probably in the Midwest. Outside of, like, traders and actual stores,
yeah.
You know. But as far as like a personal collection goes, you probably got one of the biggest collections. Biggest collection I know of, that's for sure. Your 53,000 comics does not, I've got nothing on that with my 500 comics that I might have. I don't even think I have 500 yet. I have like 6 short boxes with comics.
Well, it started when I was 8. And my dad would buy me 2 comic books every Saturday. And then when I got my own money, I started buying my own. And then as I got better jobs through my life, I got more money, so it was more to the comic shops. And I remember Sports Cards Plus in Watertown, Sue was always cutting me deals because she knew every dollar I saved on that, I was still spending in her store, so.
That's great. That's one of them things, too. So I mean, I've known you for quite a while, and I know that pretty much all your disposable income goes to collecting, whether it's comics or gaming or whatever. And there's nothing wrong. I mean, everybody has their own thing that they, you know, you get to spend your money on whatever, and whatever brings you happiness. That's great. But yeah, just the size of the collection, it's just insane.
I've had to divert some of the funds due to my writing career, but I still make it happen.
You're like, I still make sure I get my stuff.
I may not like, I do not enjoy working the overtime hours, but I know where the money goes when I get paid.
You're like, yeah, I work overtime to pay for all my other things that I like. And there's nothing wrong with that. Now, here's another follow-up to that. So you collect. Do you read your comics?
I kind of, sort of, browse through them.
Browse through them. That'd be amazing if you were able to be like, yeah, I've read all 53,000 of them at least once. That's a lot of books.
I used to read them, and then I started getting so many in a month that I had to bag them, and I'm like, I'll get back to it. And I never got back to it. So, but the bagging takes a while because I browse through it there.
Yeah.
I look at it and read some of it.
Yeah, because that's your system. You go to the comic book store, they have a table they pull out for you while you're going through your box to make sure you got everything you ordered. It's a process. It's funny because I ran into you there one time just randomly. I just went to the comic book shop when I was in town one time, and there you were.
Nothing's changed.
Oh, and I'm glad it hasn't. Now, people that are listening to this podcast, Art of Bombing Podcast, are probably thinking, why are you starting this conversation talking about comic books and collecting? Because this is usually a comedy podcast. Well, this ties in to everything with comedy and failure and things, because the person that I'm talking to, while he's an avid comic book collector, is also my former business partner, Steve Kautz, who we failed together on owning a business. So we know all about failing.
One of our biggest failures was I was trying to be our top customer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so if you're opening up in a business, it's best that that's not you. If you're the owner, you shouldn't also be the biggest customer. Red flag, red flag, red flag.
We can verify that now by our failure.
Yeah, exactly. Now that we know. But yeah, that's what now, I mean, we haven't had a comic book store in, can you believe it? It's been over 10 years. It's been almost 12 years.
Has it been that long?
It's been, yeah, it's been 12 years. It closed in 2009, and it is now 2021. So actually, this summer in June, it'll be 12 years at the comic book shop. Empiric Cards and Comics, RIP. Has been closed.
Well, I still got the sign on my shed, though. So.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Awesome.
So it kind of lives on.
Oh, that's good.
It still ain't making any money.
I think the other sign, last I know, I don't know if he still has it. I think he does, but our mutual friend Joe Story had that one.
Yeah, I think
so. I don't know
so.
If he still has it, though, because he has moved a little bit now. But I should see if he has it, and if he doesn't, what happened to it. Maybe I need to get my hands back on that. I still have a lot of apparel from the comic book shop that I still wear once in a while. I pulled out my old hoodie, the Support Literacy, Read More Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had some good times.
I still have mine, too. It's not worn very much, so.
Yeah, I have my, and then I have my uniform shirt, my bowling shirt with the names and stuff. However, I've shrunk since, we own the comic book shop, so now to wear them, they I go swimming. They're like way too big for me. But I'm holding on to them because, you know, they have my name.
That and you can't get rid of memories.
No, exactly. Well, yeah, there's the nostalgia part of it, but also, you know, I would wear it, though. That's the thing. If they would fit, if I was still a big guy, I would wear them all the time, but. Now they're just nostalgia because I go swimming in them. But it's great. But now, yeah. I mean, we had some good times, too, with owning a comp. What do you think out of that, owning a business and all the, you know, because for a lot of people, just to, you know, kind of understand business anyway, and, you know, sometimes the economy just doesn't help you. That's what really what happened with the comic book shop in our case. The town that we were in, the people that knew about us supported us very well, but we also, you know, during like 2008, there was the recession and things like that, a lot of layoffs all over the country, really in the Midwest a lot, and that's what ultimately was the demise, is that people lost their jobs, and those people that lost their jobs were our primary customers, and those primary customers, when they lost their jobs, had to switch their incomes, yeah, or their spending money had to be, you know, whatever they had for disposable income was no
longer
disposable.
I don't know why they needed food or anything.
I know, right? I don't know.
We sold chips and
exactly.
Pop.
You get a chip, get a pop, eat your comic book. I don't care. Read your comic book, then eat your comic book.
Well, that's what, you know, the paper bag, the plastic bags for that. So
I say, Hero Clicks are crunchy.
Yeah, they are. They're very crunchy, especially under your foot accidentally. And those are always the most expensive ones.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But what was your biggest takeaway from that, like having a business? Did you learn anything from owning a business?
Yeah, I learned not to do it again. Honestly, very honestly, the best thing about our business was I lost my first wife because we started a business. That is the best thing that happened to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am the cause of one divorce that was not my own. I mean, I'm probably a cause of my divorce too, but I've also caused somebody else's divorce. But just, you know, so people know, not on purpose. I did not purposely set out to do that. It just happened. Just worked out that way.
You made me more independent. She couldn't handle it.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I was like, Steve, you need to think for yourself. And she did not like that at all. I love it, though. That's so funny that your best takeaway from having the comic book shop, I honestly thought you were going to say all the cool people that we met, because I don't know about you. For me, a lot of my friends that I'm even friends with today, like some of the closest relationships, came because of that, having the store. So that's where I thought you were going.
Well,
and you're
that
like,
was good,
and
too.
And you're like, the best thing that came out of that store was it got me out of that marriage that I wasn't happy about.
Yeah, I still can talk to the friends that we made. I no longer have to talk to the one I got rid of.
You're like, that was the biggest win. It was worth going under.
If I would have known that, my 20-year marriage, if I would have known opening a comic book store would have ended it, I would have opened one a lot sooner.
It would have been like year five, I would have already had that open. Oh, that's so funny. That's great. I'm still laughing at that because I really did think you were going a different way with that. Well, but I did. But also, I forgot about that, how that was what stemmed it. I still laugh at it because I know she hates me. And it's amazing. But yeah. But now, we're, like I said, this is 12 years later. We don't have the shop anymore. And now you're doing other things. But now you're writing. And like I said, so this podcast is about failure. And I always like to talk to my guests about a time where they felt like they bombed. Well, in comedy, it's bombing on stage or, you know, failed. Is there a thing, like, do you feel like you've failed somewhere along the lines as far as like trying to write and get going as a self-publishing author?
I think I failed with the original print of book one from a different publisher. I was maybe too scared to push some boundaries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And because maybe they won't want to publish it if it's too out there, because it is a mature title.
Oh, so you kind of held back.
I held back a lot. Okay. If you read the first copy of Shattered Stars book one and then read the second one, you'll be like, wow. And I wrote the second book as if I'm not going to get published, so I just did it the way I wanted to do it. And then when I published that one, they said, let's redo one. So I said, well, let me fix it. And I brought it up somewhat to the level of book two, but... And I learned a lot in the first publishing run, too, with a different company.
Mm-hmm.
That probably areas where I was taken advantage of and whatnot. But
yeah. Well, and that all comes with learning. I mean, it's one of them things when if you don't know, it's hard to it's hard not to fail sometimes when you don't know what's, you know, about that certain thing. Like, nobody really knows about self-publishing. Now with the internet and everything, you can definitely go out and learn about different self-publishing, and as long as you want to do the work, it's fine. I mean, it goes back to even with business. When we opened up the comic book store, we didn't have any clue what we were doing.
We knew what one looked like.
We knew what one looked
and
like.
We knew how much one person spends.
Well, we also knew, yeah, we knew that. I mean, there's a few things we knew. We knew what comic book stores looked like. We knew what it, you know, we knew about comic books and gaming and nerd culture. We knew what people would spend on that kind of stuff. But what we didn't know was the important stuff, the business stuff. But you try to learn. I mean, I remember when we did that, I just read a bunch of books, you know, but because that was like the internet was just kind of beginning. And so it was like, oh, yeah, I went and got Accounting for Dummies, Small Business for Dummies, like all these books to learn how to run a business. But
I also learned with quite a few failed writing scripts, you know, where I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because my original one was in 1987, 88. My first one I wrote for a publisher, and it was like a G.I. Joe type thing, a military mission. And I kept going along the lines and basically found out that, you know, trying to make stuff accurate was hard.
Mm-hmm. So, like, just real quick, when you say script, do you mean you like a comic book script or a manuscript? Was it like a book?
It was a manuscript for a book.
Oh, okay, for a book. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And I've written many books, many stories that I didn't finish. A lot of times when I get stuck on something, I'll go back and work on another short story that I'm working on.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually all led me to writing science fiction. because I thought, well, you can make that up. And then I found out you can't. You can make up a lot of it, but you still need the science behind it. And the hardest part, I think I found with writing, is trying to write something that has not been done.
Yeah.
Like even
especially for science fiction.
Just like a weapon, I have a sword that splits. Well, that's been done, and it shoots, so that's been done. So I had to decorate it all up, and it does 12 different things.
It's like a Swiss Army space sword.
So I think that trying to do something, and then sometimes you don't know that it's been done, and you write it, and you slave on it for a whole day or more. And you finally perfect it, and you fine-tune it, and reword it, and then you look at it, and then you go turn on the TV, and you watch the exact same scene you've just been slaving over. Well, I guess I got to change it again.
Well, back to the editing. How often does that happen?
A lot.
I was going to say, I feel like that's got to happen a lot, because there is so much science fiction. And that's the same with comedy, too, where it's like, it's easy when you're writing, especially because they're, you know, both situations where it's writing jokes or whether you're writing science fiction, everything it just feels like has been done. Like every subject has been covered, and it's like trying to put a different perspective on it. But when it comes to like creating something new, it's so hard.
Yep.
And yeah. And I can see where like the sci-fi have you, cause you're right. You got to have the science. Otherwise it would just be called fiction.
Yeah. So sometimes, like when book three comes out, they say there's no such thing as cold fusion, but there is. I had to explain why, but. And sometimes you get. Lost track of where I was going with that because I took a detour. You remember when I took detours? When I was telling you something?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I go off on a few side roads and I can't find my road back.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that does not surprise me because you're the same guy that could fall asleep driving and just end up in your driveway. So
yeah, and I don't know how I got there. Just do a walk around and check under the car, make sure you didn't hit anybody on the way.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that I did not get pulled over.
That's what's really amazing. The fact that you didn't like crash and die is what's amazing.
Yeah, there was definitely a guardian angel riding with me. And when I moved to Watertown to be with where the store was at and everything and where my job was at, I think that guardian angel like wiped her forehead. Like, thank God.
Yeah, yeah. Thank God he's not driving back and forth anymore. Because you did go in the ditch one time, but it was snowy, right? Like,
yeah, about a block away from my house.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, that was like the only time.
Well, there was times I woke up driving in the ditch.
Oh,
that was fun.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I was driving across an apartment yard one day over by the cemetery, the massive apartments. I'm driving across the grass.
People in the town got to be like, man, there he is again, just driving through the yards. It's like, now that's when an old person has the right to be like, get off my lawn! And then you're like, no, I'm going to run you over.
The one thing I was going to say, though, now that I found the road without falling asleep getting there, is I am an avid science fiction fan. You know that. I've watched a lot of science fiction, read a lot of science fiction, and it amazes me when I'm trying to write science fiction that I find science fiction that I didn't even know about.
Yep.
So,
like when you mean like that you've created when you're like, oh wow, this is something new.
When I've created something and then I go back and I find other stuff, you know, because I do look through stuff to get ideas like every good writer does, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's you get inspiration.
Inspiration on that inspire, and then take it and make it your own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely. Do you now you're an avid Star Wars fan, right? No, oh, no, wait. You hate Star Wars.
No, I like Star Wars. I don't know everything about Star Wars or Star Trek, but my wife knows more about Star Wars than I do, and my friend that's as close as a sister to me, she knows more about Star Trek than I do, so I can bluff my way through.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I was going to say, because I always known you were a big sci-fi, and I know you're a big Star Wars guy. Not necessarily, like, you know... And when I say big, like, I'm not saying you know everything about it, but you've always been a big fan.
Yeah.
But obviously Farscape was where you're really, you're a lot of your
Farscape
sci-fi.
Turned my life around. Farscape was a science fiction TV series that was ahead of its time, and it made me want to write, and it made me want to write it at a more mature level.
Mm-hmm.
And I often build it as Star Wars with attitude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good example. I've seen the series because of you.
You're
the only reason I watched it. You're like, you need to watch this. You need to watch this.
And when I talk with anybody and we're getting talking about science fiction, one of my early questions is, have you seen Farscape?
Yeah.
If they have not, I go, you must see that show.
Yeah, because I'm not a big sci-fi person myself. Like, I like it, but I'm not like, it's not like my go-to when it comes to like shows and reading and this and that. But that was one series you got me to watch, and I was like, oh, this is actually really good. And then I ended up watching it all the way through, and even the movies that came out afterwards.
Yeah, the Peacekeeper Wars to wrap it up, because they canceled it with a cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, and yeah, and that's always an unfortunate one.
That was also fun, too, because I was in my first marriage at the time, and I was pledging money to get the finish of my series. And my first wife didn't like the fact that I was pledging a couple $100 to anyone that would finish Farscape. And I basically told her, I said, Farscape's more important than you at this point in time. So,
damn.
I had my ritual on Friday night was when Farscape aired, and that was church night for me. I went downstairs. Nobody bothered me during my Farscape, and if they did, they felt a wrath that they probably didn't want to feel. I remember one friend came over one time. He said, I'll come over and watch Farscape with you. I said, no, I watch it alone. He said, no, I'll come over. I said, I will slam the door in your face if you show up while it's on. He showed up with 5 minutes to go, and I slammed the door in his face. And afterwards, I walked out. He said, oh, you weren't kidding, were you? I said, no.
I don't care about my...
Another time was one when my daughter's friend was over playing with the dollhouse and making noise, and I was getting mad. And I was very proud of my daughter at that one moment in time when she walked out and she looked and she saw the situation. She says, oh, we can't be out here. This is my dad's time.
That's a good, well-trained daughter, I guess. but it's funny to me because how mad you get at things.
I do get very mad.
You do get very mad. That was like a running joke at the comic book shop because Steve's got resting asshole face. He just looks mean all the time.
Yeah, people would think that I was... that I'm a lot meaner than I am.
Which, that probably wasn't good for our business either. People come in and see you behind the counter.
What do you want?
Maybe that was a marketing thing we should have... Maybe it's too bad I didn't know as much about marketing as I do now. Because then maybe I can be like, you know what? Steve should just be an owner and not be behind the register. The little kids are afraid of him.
We were good cop, bad cop. I was the bad cop.
Yeah, we definitely were good cop, bad cop. That's a true story. Oh, that's funny. Now, with your book, you've got... So, book one's out. You're about to release book two. You've written three and four.
Yep.
And you're currently writing five.
Yes.
So, how many books do you plan to do with this series? So, the series is Shadowed Stars, science fiction book. How many books do
There's
you
There's eight numbered books in the series.
Okay, so you're going to do like eight books.
And then I can do unnumbered ones after that.
Yeah.
And I've also got short stories on my website, which I will plug now.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can bring up your website, where they are, you just well tell them where.
ShadowedStarsBooks.com. That's ShadowedStarsBooks.com, StarsBooks.com. And there's short stories and glossary entries, sometimes blogs, entered around the 20th of every month.
Okay. So do you, like the stories that you put, are they all like original short stories just for kind of the website? Or do you take like excerpts from some of the books to put up
there?
No,
they are straight stories that I created just for the website. They're not as mature read as the books are. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm trying to get them as close as I can, but the books are pretty mature, so I can't do a lot of that on the website. But a lot of them are brought because I couldn't do as much with the character in the book, or the character might not have survived in the book, and I wanted to do more than what I could.
Okay, well, that's a good question, right? Or a good transition, just talking about your book and the storyline. What is the book about?
The book book one starts out on a looking for life on another planet. We find it. We find humans fighting with each other. And then they discover more about the Ubide alien race, which is your standard gray aliens that everybody always sees, and that how they are stealing tech and bringing people to feed the Dirths, the carnivore race. And basically the concept of book one is that the Ubides populated the Earth. That's why there's so many different cultures, because they just brought humans from many planets and put them on Earth.
Oh, okay. So is it follow, like, one character, or is it follow several characters, or...?
The odd number books follow the, what I call the Slade line of characters, and then the even number books follow what I call the Josh Broody line of characters. So that's the main character, but there'll be cameos and crossovers in between each mm-hmm. book, so that when you're reading book two, you know what's going on with the characters in the odd numbered books. So when you get back to book three, you go, oh, okay. And then you'll have a little thing in that book about, oh, this is happening in the even number books right now. So it's kind of keep you fresh and up to date on the other characters, but not to overtire you every book about the same people.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like the same core in every book.
Right.
It's more of like, so like in book one, you've got your main characters. Then in book two, you got different main characters. But those main characters are the sub-characters from book one, and then the yeah. main characters in book one are the sub-characters of book two, kind of.
Like in book one, there's actually one chapter, maybe two, but they focus on, we just go to this, we got the villain from book one involved, but we just, all of a sudden, we're not talking about the main characters. We're doing these other ones, and two of them make it out, and then we don't cover it again until book two. When you come into book two, you see, well, oh, this is what happened after that incident. So
is it kind of like an adventure sci-fi? Is that what, how you...
Yeah, I would say that. High adventure.
High adventure, okay.
Violence and sex obviously grow with each book. Because I find the line that I can bend through, and then I go, well, okay, they took that one. I'll go a little bit farther and see where... I'll find out where that line is eventually.
Yeah.
But in this culture, there is no line at sometimes. So.
Yeah, that's a lot of, like, writing. And that's something I do want to talk about with this before we wrap up, because coming from a perspective of being a writer myself and, you know, writing jokes and writing comedy, you know, I don't have a regular routine like I should, you know, and I know that I should. I try to write every day, but that just doesn't always happen. But you have a pretty strict writing routine because you're, like, pumping out content left and right. And so I want to talk about that. Like, how much time in a week, in just a normal week, I mean, obviously when you have to work overtime and different things like that at your regular job, you can't devote as much time as you want into writing. But how often do you try to write? Like, do you sit down, I'm going to write, I got off work, I'm going to write for at least 2 hours before I go to bed, or... I know on the weekends you said you try to get out three chapters.
Yeah, the goal now is three chapters every weekend.
Every weekend? Or every week?
Every weekend. During the week, if I get to work on it, that's great. That's a bonus. But a lot of it is advertising and stuff, you know, sending
stuff. Oh, okay, so you spend during the week, you try to do some of the...
The week is the non-writing part of the side of
the
career.
Marketing and trying to get people to buy the book and things like that. Okay.
And I do more on the social media on the week than I do on the weekend. I try to lock myself into the writing room on the weekend. When I do, like, sometimes I'll watch wrestling or something, and I feel guilty watching TV because I should be writing. And often I'll stop watching something because I have to go down and write.
Have you heard of laptops?
Yes, I have a laptop.
You know, you can have a lap in your lap.
You can have a
laptop.
Most people
on top of your lap.
Most people can do that. I cannot watch TV and write at the same time. I need complete solitude when I'm writing.
Then also, you'd probably be writing, and then something would happen on wrestling, and you'd like jump up, freak out, and then your computer.
Or
would
if I'm
broke.
Watching one of my shows like Farscape, where I'm yelling at the TV.
That's funny.
If it ain't a good show, if it's a good show, I'm yelling at the TV. So that's on my judge. Like, my neighbor was really concerned that me and my current wife were having a fight one day because she said that the following day, she said, I heard all that yelling. Are you and her okay? I said, oh, I was yelling at the TV.
And they were probably like, yeah, okay, right.
Well, then when they...
You were yelling at the TV.
Well, when they get to know me, they go, oh, he was really yelling at the TV.
That's so funny. That's hilarious. Because I could see that. I could see the whole neighborhood hearing you. I've heard you yell and get mad. It's pretty... To me, it's very amusing watching you get upset.
To me, it's an out-of-body experience.
To most people,
I'm literally watching myself yell, and I can't do nothing about it.
Everybody just laughs at you. It's hilarious. So then, going back to writing on the weekend, how many hours do you dedicate then? Do you think, like, I'm just curious. Like, okay, today... Well, you know, we're doing the podcast, we had lunch and got a couple other things, but if none of this was taking place, how many hours do you think you would write just today?
I would have been writing on it. I try to get up, I usually get up around noon, and I try to write till, you know, 3 in the morning.
Holy buckets!
And a lot of it is rewriting.
So you're writing, so you'll get up, try to start writing right away. So you're saying on a weekend, just one day, you could write for 12 to 15 hours?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean... You got to stop and go get groceries and do all that stuff and have lunch with your friends and your family.
Yeah, but
it's
hours.
Back.
Wow.
And when I'm not writing, I'm feeling guilty.
Wow.
When I'm not working, I should be writing. That's my rule that I've put into this. And that is why books 3 and 4 were written down in 1 year. I did two books. It took forever to do book 1. Like 10 years or so,
mm-hmm.
And I took 2 years to do book 2, and I got turned down for a promotion, and I just decided I should be writing. I got a whole new attitude, a whole new motivation and ambition, and I wrote 2 books in 1 year.
Wow, that is a lot of motivation for writing. I just wish
I could have like gotten motivated before I was 52 years old in life.
You're never too old. I wish I was that motivated to do. I have like all these writing projects, but then I never sit down.
Well,
and do
I have many. I probably have as many unfinished stories as I do comic books downstairs.
Do you, going back to your writing and your process a little bit, like when you decide, do you have like a pre-writing process? Like what you have an idea for a character or story arc or something like that? What do you do before you kind of like get into writing a book?
I usually plan out my characters, and I'll usually write a little status on the characters, try to draw a picture of them, and then I might imagine of which star, Hollywood star, would want to play that, so I kind of get a feel of who that would be. And then I write everything down. Well, I did write everything down in a notebook. The entire book was written in a notebook. But I found out I don't stay on the notebook, so there's no reason to do that anymore.
Just FYI, people listening, yeah, a notebook. When writers used notebooks before there was like actual computers.
Which brings up a funny thing about the store. Remember when we had the computers and everything, and you were so mad because I was keeping records of stuff in a paper notebook, and you said, "Steve, we have technology now."
Yeah.
And then that one day that we couldn't get the computer and the register up, I brought the notebooks out and slapped them on the desk. I said, "Dan, you know what's good about paper? It don't crash."
True story. That's why we were a team.
Old school, new school. Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, that's right. Good cop, bad cop. That's probably the best way to describe our partnership. Good cop, bad cop.
And our friendship, too.
Yeah, and our friendship, yeah. Anybody that sees you outside is probably like, yeah, he's mean.
I have that reputation.
You do.
But then when you get to know me, then you find out I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly. You're quite the opposite of a grumpy old man. I mean, you're still a grumpy old man. But, you know, you're a fun grumpy old man.
Once you know the grumpy old man.
Once you know the grumpy old man. Yeah. But going back, so you basically kind of did, like, character write-ups, almost like the back of an action figure card.
Yeah.
The bio, the drawing, and everything.
That comes from my action figure collecting days also when I was a kid. And I always cut out the status card, and I always, you know... kept that,
yep.
So everybody's got a history when I write them, and some of them change, you know, mm-hmm. Obviously. The book 1 of Shadowed Stars is nowhere near the original concept. The original concept was supposed to be Drew Cage and Eva Cusping and the Queen, and then I didn't like crashing my starship. I didn't like how I did it. Wrote it over 100 times, threw many copies away, finally crashed a shuttle and forgot that Drew Cage was still on the ship, so I had to come up with something for him to do. So the whole story changed.
Oh, wow. So you wrote the first book, you did over 100 rewrites on it? Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Wow.
Just on chapter, on the first few chapters, just to crash the ship.
Wow.
I just was never happy with it.
Wow. That's,
and that's why it took 10 years to write one book.
Well, no, that's, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I know a lot of people when they write scripts, you know, Mike Birbiglia is a big, is a good example of this. I've heard him talk about, he's a comic. People listening will know who he is. You probably, I don't know if you do, but he's a comic. He's a storytelling kind of comic, but he's written some stuff. But anytime he, like, writes, like, a script for, like, a movie or whatever, like, he just does rewrite after rewrite after rewrite after rewrite. And he'll do, like, 40 to 50 rewrites before he's somewhat satisfied with it.
There's sometimes when I write out something, like I said, I never tend to stay to the notebook anymore, because everything just changes. I let the story start writing itself, and when you do that, I think I've actually gotten better writing.
Yeah, well, and I've heard that with writing. I used to, you know, I big creative writer person myself, and that was always kind of like, I don't know if it's a, if a trope is the right word, or that's not the right way to describe it, but that's something a lot of writing teachers and people would always say, is that you got to let the writing do itself, and if you get into it, it'll just, you know, your characters will start writing their own stories.
I can literally tell in book one and in book two that where I was pushing the story and where the story was writing itself.
Mm-hmm. And then how did you, in a case like that where you're like, oh, okay, so I know I'm pushing it this way, but it wants to go this way. Do you just then at that point you're like, all right, I gotta let the, let's go see where the book is gonna take itself.
Pretty much, it's like I get the one thing I in there got in there, you know, best I can. Like there's a computer scene on an alien world in book one that I still can't handle, but it's brief, and then we move on. Much like, although with the starship, I could not learn how to move on. I had to crash that correctly. So, but you can. A reader might be able to pick up on it, but as me writing it, I can read back and go, like, cringe. It's like, ugh.
Well, but that, we're our own worst critics.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, well, that's...
I have a hard time reading my own stuff anyway, which is why I'm really excited about book three, which will be going into edit soon.
That's how I feel about comedy sometimes. It's like, I don't want to watch myself, even though I know I need to get better at the craft, but then it's like... I'm also just like, oh, you know, I can have a bad set and I'll know it's bad in my head. I'm like, that was terrible. But the audience will come up, that was the greatest thing I ever saw. And I just want to be like, were you there?
Yeah.
Are you sure you were in the same room that I was in?
Sometimes people have read some of my stuff and they like stuff I don't like. And,
yep.
And some of the stuff I thought was really good was like, how did you not like that? That was like some of the, like, I'm really scared for book three when it comes out, because I think that's the best thing I've ever written.
That's funny. But yeah, that's definitely how it goes sometimes. I mean, everything's subjective, and I suppose, I mean, comedy's subjective, I'm sure writing's subjective, especially fiction, science fiction. People are going to like certain things and not others, and ultimately we don't get to decide. We just put out our art and let, I mean, that's really any art. You just got to put your art out there and let the people decide what they like,
yeah,
what they like and don't like about your art.
Like where I let the story write itself. It's mm-hmm. like, okay, it's fine. You know, and a lot of times I'm like, there was actually I had to rewrite some of book two because I didn't realize I killed a character off that I'm using in book three. And when we were editing
well, that
it.
That sounds definitely sounds like a bomb.
We were editing it and I'm like, I can fix that. I can fix that. And then when she exploded in a shuttle, I was exploded. I need that character. So I had to go do a whole rewrite on that and kind of explain how she got out of it. But
and I suppose that probably helps having somebody edit. Because did you catch that or did an editor catch that?
I caught it because I hadn't had book three out there yet.
Oh, okay.
So the editor wouldn't have known that, you're going to use this character in book three.
So you knew in your head, you're like, I need to use this character, and you went back to book two just to kind of like...
When I was
remember what
approving the edit on book two, I found out.
Oh, okay.
Because first she, you know, she was fine, and then I found out that she had her thumbs cut off. Well, okay, I can fix that in book three. I can just put in, yeah, okay, her thumbs were cut. And then there was something else. I'm like, oh, I can fix that. But the exploded on a shuttle, I was traumatized.
Dead. He's like, no, that's probably not going to work. Unless I bring it back as a ghost. And this is not a ghost story. This is, well, maybe it is. I don't know.
It's not a ghost story. But there was another thing in book two that I found that I had a character died and was later on mentioned, so that they were alive.
Mm-hmm.
But it helps, because then the Shrow, or the prophets, the alien race is the Shrow, the prophets are what they are, all of a sudden that they got two lives, as long as their body can be regenerated. So it helped that I messed up. I bombed literally on that one, but I'm like, okay, well, it will help the race out because now they have two lives.
That's great. Led to something else. That's awesome. All right. Well, we're going to get wrapped up. I know you got a lot of social media stuff for the book. Where can people pick up a copy of the book?
The book can be ordered at any bookstore, but it's online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Google Play, and iTunes.
And you can get it right at the website, ShadowedStarsBooks.com.
ShadowedStarsBooks.com has links to all those online locations that you can order it from.
Excellent. And then do you have you have social media for the...
I have ShadowedStarsBK as Twitter and Instagram. Also, Stephen Couts is Twitter and Instagram. And Facebook, Facebook.com/ShadowedStarsBooks.
Perfect. And those will all be in the show notes for the people listening. If you're interested, definitely go pick up the book. Even if you don't read science fiction, pick it up, because you're supporting another independent artist. And if we don't support each other, what's the point?
Book one is out now. Book two should be out by the end of June. Book three will be going into edit. Book four is approved, and I'm writing book five.
So you're going to have to buy a lot of books. apparently eight.
buy extra copies. That's fine, too. But the main, I do the social media stuff to kind of keep fresh, but the main site, ShadowedStarsBooks.com, is where the most fresh stuff is out there. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, thanks, Steve, for doing this. This has been fun.
Thank you.
I got a little history of us in the comic book shop.
Reminiscing on our failure.
On our cosmic comic book shop failure.
Thank you.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com. to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving, or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe so you can live to love.